Warming temps and heavy rains can spell trouble for your home. Don't wait for a problem. Get a free foundation inspection from PermaSeal. Stay dry, stay protected. For peace of mind, call 800-421-SEAL or visit permaseal.net.
Eric Zorn joins us now. You ever been bit by a bat, Eric?
I have never been bitten by a rodent of any sort.
It's a good way to live. Eric is the publisher of the... And by the way, they're not rodents. They're mammals. I guess rodents are mammals, too, but bats are not rodents, are they?
I thought they were. I thought they were like flying rats, but I don't, you know... My knowledge of bats is fairly thin. I did once visit a friend out in Arizona who kept bats in her apartment, and they just like lived in the bathroom. And she said, "Don't worry about it. They're just fruit bats." And then she showed me, but she pulled out a peach and she held it in her hand, and a bat flew out of the bathroom and landed on her wrist and just devoured the peach in a really violent way. And then, you know, I was supposed to shower in that bathroom the next morning, and I was able to do it, but it was very, very disheartening. You know, it's some people have things about spiders. I kind of have things about bats, but
I would too. Have you heard of the expression French bath? Like, did you have some Old Spice cologne you could have just spritzed with? That would have been one way to get the day started. Eric is the publisher of the Picayune Sentinel, a weekly newsletter containing comedy, commentary, little bat information, though really not big on bat information, and more. If you email ericzorn@gmail.com, he will add you to his list. By the way, Eric, Karen Conti, the attorney, was on just a couple of minutes ago. We were talking about the case of the Highland Park shooter and the fact that the son will not testify against the father, though the father did endorse the son getting a gun when he was underage. It required a parent signature and, you know, vouching for the kid. And while the father should have known that the child was maybe not in mentally sound enough shape to own a gun, the father yet endorsed it. Now the father is being tried in part for the son's crimes. And you said on the Mincing Rascals podcast that since the son committed the crimes as an adult, the father should not be charged for any responsibility for what the kid did. That's a fair specimen of your view on that, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. He needed his father's endorsement and his help to buy that gun when he was a minor. But when he allegedly committed this crime at the parade in Highland Park, he was an adult and he could have bought that weapon, I think, anytime within a couple of months before that, when he turned 21, I think it was. So the father was okay, was no longer necessary. And I think that would mean that the statute of limitations would have run out on his responsibility. I mean, what if he had shot up a parade 5 years later or 10 years later? Would the father still be responsible? I mean, once you're an adult, you're responsible for what you do. And what the father did when he was a minor is no longer, I think, legally responsible. However, you know, the prosecutors up in Lake County have brought these charges and they think they can make them stick. I just, as a matter of law, I mean, I don't have any sympathy for this dad necessarily. I mean, it was terrible what he did, buying his gun for his kid who was clearly very troubled. But as a matter of law, I don't know that you can hold a parent responsible for something that an adult child does once they become an adult.
Yeah, I think the complication here is the timing of it all. It wasn't 10 years or 5 years or 2 years later. It was a matter of months later. So maybe it was 2 years. But, you know, the timing is close enough that the young man still was close enough to his childhood that we might still tag the crime to the dad. But you're right. If he had done it years and years later, we would say, well, those two things are not connected. But just the timing of it, it's easier to connect these things. And I think our own bias falls into this. If you're not a gun guy, and this was a gun guy, some of you own guns and you're NRA members and you're Mr. and Mrs. Second Amendment. I'm not. So my own bias falls into this too.
I get that, except that the father made a huge mistake, a huge error in judgment in helping his son buy a gun. No question about it. I think it was then about 2 years after that the son committed this crime when he was an adult. And I just, you know, as a matter of someone who likes to, you know, read the rules at the inside of the top of the box, I don't see how that could possibly apply. But it's gotten this far. It's survived several motions to dismiss, and you've got a jury up there who is probably going to be as angry as you and I are about what happened, what this guy did. But I don't know that your anger at this man can be covered by the law. And I don't know, what did Karen think that he was going to be convicted or not?
She's like you. She says that this is the defense. What you're saying would be how you defend it. But she said there's going to be a lot of angry people who are upset about this. I'm sure the jury instructions will try and, you know, ask them to park their anger on the sidelines. But she didn't have a prediction about how this thing is going to go down, except that they must feel like they have a case. They're bringing the trial. You know, they're bringing it to court. So,
yeah, it feels political to me, and it feels like I would have to predict that there would be a conviction, and that conviction would not sustain the appeal process, would not survive, that he will ultimately not be convicted of the crime, even though he will be found guilty at trial. That'd be my prediction, because there's such anger up there, and like I say, I share that anger, I share that dismay, that horror of what happened.
But that shouldn't be the reason that should not be the reason we convict people of a crime, because we're angry about what happened. If they're not guilty of breaking the law, then even though we're angry about what happened, I mean, I understand that intellectually, but if this father has to spend time in jail, I will be okay with that too, if I can just say that. By the way, Eric, we'll record the Mincing Rascals podcast tomorrow. I wonder if we should talk about how difficult it is to talk about what is happening in Israel and the Gaza Strip. It came up briefly on one of our recent podcasts. I don't think that conversation is gone away. If you say things about Israel, but don't say things about the Palestinians or vice versa, there's no end of the judgment and anger you're going to incite. And I find that happening to me in my personal life, talking with friends, on the radio when I talk about it, and I felt it in the podcast. Are you feeling the same thing as you write or think about this?
Oh, definitely. I wrote something that I thought was fairly mild after it happened. I mean, expressing my horror at Hamas's terrorist incursion into Israel, but arguing that for Israel to come back and double down and commit atrocities, killing children and innocent civilians in order to get back at Hamas, only stood to risk inflaming hatreds in that region and was not going to lead to peace. And I got dogpiled for that. Everyone's got from both sides. People were saying, like, oh, the Palestinians have a complete claim to this. It was their land. They were run off it. People who are sympathetic with Israel, and I'm sympathetic with both sides, and it's hard to express that by saying, well, I want you guys to figure this out and stop killing each other. Even saying that gets people in a real state, like, you've got to come down strong on one side or the other. And I find myself staying away from the subject, frankly. I didn't write about
that
in my newsletter
and yet
last week.
And yet tapping out doesn't seem to be what you and I should be doing, professionally at least, maybe personally. Like, I don't have to talk about this at dinner. But I feel like you and I, if we're going to have the positions we do, should weigh in with some sense or civility about the thing. And you can't. I got a note from a friend I value the other day, and it was very one-sided about this thing and strident and emotional. And I know if I just, the only thing I could say was, yeah, I hear you. I feel you. It's terrible. If I had said, but that would have not been constructive. I mean, like, I would not have moved the needle, and it would not have seemed to have done me any good.
Yeah. I had a friend cancel his subscription to the Picayune Sentinel because he was so angry that I didn't come down more strongly in favor of Israel. And it wasn't like I was opposed to Israel. I just didn't bash hard enough on the Palestinians, I guess, for his taste. So yeah, it happened. And these are people who are like I say, friends, people who I know. It's very difficult to navigate that. So I'm finding myself staying away from it and pleading a form of ignorance, which is that I have not studied this conflict the way some people have. It's like you can say, like, look, this goes back 75 years, and there have been all these incidents that have happened over time. And at some point, I checked out of that because I was like, these people can't get along, and really smart people haven't been able to solve it. What am I going to do here in Chicago to say something that hasn't been said a million times? So
I'm sitting there listening to somebody mansplain to me the Middle East, and I'm like, oh, okay, all right. And in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, I'm not sure I buy all of this, but I don't want to do this right now. You know, I don't want to have this conversation. So you just sort of let it pass. And again, I'm not sure that that's the responsible attitude to take either. Sing. Boy, that sounds like a kind of folksy Christmas song, John. What's going on there? Eric, what's going on there? What is that?
You know, what's going on there is that is a song written by my friend and former colleague, Mary Schmeek, and she and I are going to be hosting Songs of Good Cheer, the annual holiday sing-along at the Old Town School of Folk Music in early December. And this will be the 25th annual event, and we started it off as we're just going to do it once, and here we are 25 years later.
Mary, you should have said no. See what you got yourself into there?
Yeah, but I got a song out of it that starts, oh, it's Christmas time again, and we're all a little older. We never imagined we'd be this much older during
25 years.
It doesn't feel like 25 years. And John, you've been a part of this for many of those years, coming on stage to introduce us, singing along, and your wife Brenda comes. It's
really
great.
Nice. It's part of our tradition, and it is for families, and it's at the Old Town School of Folk Music, and so you guys are doing it December, 7, 8, 9, 10? Are those the dates this year, guys?
Yep.
7, 8, 9, 10.
And
yes.
Yeah, you can go to oldtownschool.org/concerts. And all the information is there. What we do is Mary and I host the show, but we've assembled a cast of incredibly good musicians behind us. You know, John, that they are it's an amazing band.
They're
we have
amazing,
with horns,
amazing.
Horns and fiddles, and I mean it's not just folk. It's that we got a whole thing going on. We provide songbooks to people in the audience, so everyone's supposed to sing along. Most people do. My daughter's boyfriend was brought to the show one year and wasn't told it was a sing along. So everyone's got to be warned. You're supposed to be singing in full voice. And we did it even during the pandemic. We did it virtually during the pandemic, but we've kept the tradition alive. And like I said, it started off. Mary wrote a column saying, "I don't think anyone's singing Christmas carols anymore." This is like, say, 26 years ago. And I said, "Well, hey," I called her bluff. I said, "I'll bet we can get some people out to the Old Town School. We'll get some friends together, and you'll play the piano. Mary's a very good pianist, and I'll play the guitar or something, and we'll lead people in songs." And she agreed to do that, and we sold out the first show that we did so quickly that we added a second show. And then over the years, we've kept adding shows, and we've sold out nearly all of them over time. And it's become a tradition. Families buy seats in blocks of 10 and 12 tickets at a time now, because it's a good time. And it's a lot less Mighty Wind than you might think.
And, you know, one of the things people tell us is that it just feels so good to them to come into the room that we do the show in at the Old Town School of Folk Music in Lincoln Square. It's just beautiful. It's about 450 people.
Yeah.
And it just feels so good to them to come into that beautiful room. Many of them with, you know, some family and friends, but also meeting strangers when they get there. And to just have this communal, non-commercial moment at the holidays, away from the fray. And the neighborhood of Lincoln Square is really great. So
yeah,
most people
yeah.
come and they have dinner,
yep.
drinks before or afterwards. It's just
yep.
really great places to make a whole evening of it.
And the show starts with the song that you wrote, Mary. Are you going to start the show again this year with your song?
Well, we usually wait till about song number three before we,
song number three?
Stuff that people are going to recognize, you know, and then we give them the new song.
We guarantee there will be songs you've never heard before, songs of the Christmas season or the holiday season, and there'll be songs that you've sung a million times, and it's fun to do them both because you got the words. And Mary's song has become quite popular, and it's sung in elementary schools and junior highs around the country now, and it's a wonderful expression of what Christmas means and how it knits together the year and how as Mary talks about, like, yeah, the world is. One of the lines of the world is still full of troubles. It's always full of troubles. And yet we're going to come together. We're going to raise our voices together. We're going to forget about those troubles more or less for the next 2.5 hours or so and just sing our hearts out. And like I say, it is an experience that we look forward to every year. And every year it chokes us up and makes us laugh. Right. And it's a great time, and we hope you're going to be there again, John.
I'm going to do the Sunday show, I think, Eric, if that's okay. I think Brenda and I are going to come out Sunday.
Great, I'll write you down right now for that. And we also, if you follow the Picayune Sentinel, you can. I have details about the contest we have. We're asking readers to submit essays about their most memorable Christmas gift, whether that memory is good or bad. What's the and holiday gift, I should say. What's the most memorable gift? And you can write to me, Eric Zorn@gmail.com, and tell me about it. And we have those winners up on stage to read their essays and join us in singing. And that's always a nice part of the evening as well.
And it's usually a different prompt. And those stories are always so good, so funny, so heartwarming. And I just want to say, you don't know how much weight you're carrying on your shoulders until you get there and you sit down with all of those colorful sweaters in the audience. And then we start singing and I start crying. I do it every year for the first couple of songs. And I think the world don't feel so weary. I feel like this emotional catharsis or release, it just feels so good. I don't know why I'm telling you that, and I don't cry much, but I think it's just the joy and the
But that's
the
one thing we love about you, John, is that you can get a little weepy over a song. And, you know, one thing that's so much fun for us is that we laugh a lot during the show. There's a lot of laughing that goes on because Eric Zorn is a very funny man, in case
it's true.
But there's a lot of emotion that comes up for people, you know,
and there are Christmas songs that you know, and then many that you don't. There's Hawaiian songs and Jewish songs and country songs and blues songs and all kinds of songs. So it's a real musical exploration. Pete just whispered in my ear, look at the clock. It's 11:59. Okay. I'm out of time. So Mary and Eric, how do I get the tickets one more time? Go to
oldtownschool.org/concerts. It'll be there. And all the information is at the Picayune Sentinel. If you just want to write to me, Eric Zorn@gmail.com, I'll sign you up and send you the details.
Okay. Mary, good to hear you. I will see you soon.
Same here, John. And thanks to your listeners. We hope to see some of them.
Eric, I'll talk to you on the Mincing Rascals podcast tomorrow.